And mahalo for listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
So mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. And Eric is in the house. Eric, let me see that you're potted upright.
Nope.
Try another one.
I think I am working.
Okay, so there he is. And I also have Jennifer in here. Jennifer, say hi.
Hello.
Okay, Jennifer Luck. She's from the Public Land Trust.
Hawaiian Islands Land Trust.
Hawaiian Islands Land Trust. Okay, and then I also have on Adam. Adam, can we hear you? Let's see, Adam. Got Adam from the Philippines in here.
No, you're good. It's all good.
Let me see.
Let's see. Well, while we're waiting for that to get started, I can say for one, Jennifer, are you visiting the island or do you live here?
I'm not. I've lived here for 6 years, okay. And I'm the Kauai Island Director of the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust. We're a private nonprofit organization dedicated basically to protecting the places that sustain us. So it's a long way of saying we protect open space and open land.
Mm-hmm.
And the conservation values of those lands that we protect can vary from straightforward recreational land, like at a public beach park. We own Kahili Beach or Rock Quarry Beach.
Oh, okay.
Also lands that have cultural significance, archaeological sites on them, lands with agricultural lands where there's active farming going on, endangered species habitat, all sorts of things. So
you guys watch over a large range of land, not just, say, one type of just open land.
Right.
Parks and
right.
conservation land, too.
Very diverse. We protect about 18,000 acres statewide at this point. Our main office is in Maui, and I'm the only staff person here on Kauai. We have staff on the Big Island and are looking for staff on Oahu.
Yeah, so I'm stoked that you're there. We're trying to pull up Adam. Adam, can you hear us?
I can hear you. I can hear him, but he's...
I can hear him, but I got to get him on the air. Eric, can you go grab Yaw and have him help
me? Yeah, no
worries.
1 second.
Okay, Adam, stay holding there. We're going to be talking to Adam in the Philippines. And he is there helping with the emergency effort. And then we will be also having callers calling in and speaking with Adam a little bit. And so, Adam, try again. Can I hear you?
Sounds very far
okay,
away.
We're still working on getting Adam in there, but...
Well, while we're working on that, I can say that it has been extremely cold lately. Is it just me on the east side? But I'm wearing a sweater right now, and this is pretty rare for me.
I have a sweater and a jacket on.
Okay.
Okay, and Adam, are you on now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I can barely hear you. We're still working on getting you in here. All right. And so as Dean is helping us with that. Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I can hear you on my one ear. So
one ear is good enough.
Okay. Adam, so are you in Manila?
Yes. Right now I am in Makati City. I'm helping with the Department of Social Welfare and Development for their relief efforts.
And so you live in Hawaii also, or are you mostly living in the Philippines?
No, my name is Adam Kiave Manalo Camp. I'm part Filipino, part Hawaiian. I grew up in Papakolea.
And so are you over there for this relief effort specifically?
Actually, I was here taking up my master's degree in history at the University of the Philippines.
All right. Well, you know, our prayers are definitely out there for everything that's going on. It seems just, I don't know what the right word is to use, just amazingly bad. How is the outlook over there?
Well, Things are getting very desperate, particularly in the regions that were hit. There were six major islands that are badly affected. Leyte Island was probably the most severely affected, along with Samar Island. Tacloban City is in Leyte. And I think most people have seen some of the pictures that's been coming out from Tacloban.
Yes, and it seems like there's a handful of islands that have been hit, you know, and they're separated from each other and not so easy even to get any kind of help in there yet.
Yes, the Philippines comprises of 7,104 islands. And six large islands with populations of more than 3 million have all been hit. Tacloban had a population of 250,000 people before the storm, and all of them have been displaced. All of them. The whole entire city is flat.
250,000. So what are those people doing? I mean, where are they sleeping?
In tents and wherever they can. The relief efforts here have been rather slow, to say the least. But the thing is, this was such a major typhoon that there's so many logistical problems here that it's difficult to deal with for any government, really. But the relief efforts on the part of from the U.S., from Hawaii, from Japan, from even Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam, and Russia have all been really great.
I know that from Kauai, the groups are kind of banding together to help the victims, and they're coordinating. The effort that's coming out of Kauai is going to be coordinated, so it is the most organized that we can put together. It was actually the front page headline of our paper today. You know, many people here really, really are reeling over this because it's their family. Big part of our population is from the Philippines. Do you have any words of encouragement? I've seen numbers like 10,000 losses. Are the numbers staying about consistently right there? Or?
Well, all I can say is, you know, hopefully things will get more organized soon. But we really, in the Philippines, we really need help here. There's the devastation. It's just so massive. You know, imagine Hurricane Katrina, but all over the south. That's how large and widespread the devastation is. It's just so overwhelmingly large. And granted, some of the problems that have arisen from the relief efforts have been the Philippine government itself. But the U.S. government has been extremely helpful, and donations from Hawaii to the Hawaii Red Cross have also been extremely helpful. In fact, I looked at some donations yesterday at the warehouse for the DSWD here in Manila.
So they've arrived already?
Yes. Some of the donations have already arrived.
And I've been reading on the web in different places that it is the most effective for people to actually donate money more than, say, clothes and blankets and stuff because of the distribution elements. Is that correct, or is it medicine? Do you guys need doctors? I mean, what would be the best thing to be bringing over there? Just for the listener who might be willing to volunteer and go, is it like carpenters? I mean, what do you guys need?
Everything. Doctors. We need nurses. We need, we also need carpenters as well. As far as donations, we still, yes, we need clothes, but we need, I think the government is saying to send cash because it's just easier for them to deal with. But the people here are asking for clothes, rice, and canned goods. Don't send noodles because there's not enough clean water to even cook with.
So how do you cook the rice?
Yeah, they rather use the water for the rice rather than for cooking with the cooking noodles. Rice is more important, especially for Filipinos. You cannot survive without rice.
And so is it the kind of thing where individuals can just donate? Or I see like the Filipino Chamber of Commerce is going to be hosting a bit of this, and the Kauai Chamber of Commerce, because Randy Francisco, he is part of the Filipino community too. So I see Oscar Portugal, a number of people. If I have an Akamai listener, like the Kauai Visayan, is that how you say that? Visayan Club? That's the area that's been impacted the most. Is that correct?
Visayan.
Mm. And how is Manila?
Manila, here, we're not that... We're busy with packing relief goods from abroad. We're also busy with evacuations, particularly with from Tacloban and other areas, because they don't have hospitals. The hospitals have not been reopened. They can only treat, you know, cuts and bruises over there because there's no electricity yet. So a lot of the heavy medical problems have to be done here in Manila.
And you are going to be flying over there again in a few days. Is that correct?
Actually, I was in Bohol 2 weeks ago because of the earthquake. I was helping with disaster relief in Bohol. And then I got back home to Makati. And then I find out about this typhoon. So yes, it looks like I'm going back to... Actually, I want to check out the islands of Panay and Bohol again, because I understand that in the island of Panay, they're not receiving any relief goods at all.
And so how are they going to get in there? Can they bring them in with a helicopter? Or what can we do to help that area?
Well, luckily for those particular islands, it's a little bit more accessible because it's closer to Manila. Plus, the U.S. has sent the George Washington aircraft carrier, which will really help expedite the supply, the distribution of relief goods, because, you know, Philippine Air Force can land in the carriers and then drop off the goods offshore. So make things a lot more speedy. Problem is, the government says that the starvation will start to kick in maybe next week. According to my reports from Japanese and Australian relief organizations, they are already experiencing shortages of medicine and food already.
How about fresh water?
In some parts of the Philippines, the fresh water is not a problem, but on the island of Leyte, it seems to be a major issue.
And then when I look at these pictures, it looks like there are many people who have passed away all over the place, like as was in Indonesia a few years back. Are they able to be mobilizing and moving the deceased out of the area so that it's not creating extra disease?
Well, from what I understand from here, from the Department of Social Welfare and Development, as of tomorrow, we'll be out of body bags. That's how much... There's a lot of corpses. People are burying corpses on the side of highways and whatnot. And there's already been mass graves that's been constructed to bury the corpses. The dead, there's so many dead. And you know, that's the first thing that you notice when you go to Tacloban right now, is the smell of the corpses. There's so many people that are dead, and there's not enough people to bury the bodies.
It's so sad to hear this. You know, we here in Kauai, we've had a handful of hurricanes, and we've been very, very lucky and been able to make it through it. But, I mean, hurricanes are really super meaningful to us, and we realize how terrible it can be. But we haven't, you know, at least not in the last 50 years or so gone through anything.
The type of stuff that you're going through right now is unimaginable for the common populace out here.
Yeah, it's so hard. I saw a speaker from your country at the UN, you know, talking about climate change. Is there a discussion on why there's been such a powerful storm, or is it, you know, just it's so devastating, everybody's just dealing with the problem rather than looking at what happened or why it happened?
Actually, there's a lot of discussion among academics right now about the speech that was made at the Warsaw.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very moving speech, and personally, I agree. And when I saw the speech, I actually cried because I understand what he was saying. Because this, for many Filipinos, this has become a way of life, having to deal with typhoon after typhoon, flooding after flooding. And, you know, I hate to vent out of frustration, but the UN has been taking so long and deciding anything of importance to climate change. And you had, of course, George W. Bush before, who didn't believe in climate change, global warming. The current president of the Philippines doesn't believe in global warming either. He doesn't believe in renewable energy, in fact.
And you had an earthquake is what you said. Just I know that there's been just one disaster after another, but that area was recovering from an earthquake that happened how long ago?
On October 12th.
So very recently.
Yes, and in fact, there was another earthquake this morning. 4.3, I believe.
I've seen pictures of the island that you're speaking of. It looks like pretty much everything has been washed off that island in terms of buildings.
Yeah. Actually, I heard reports from the Philippine Navy that right after the earthquake, when they were making their patrols, they were still finding dead bodies in the water.
From the earthquake?
Yes. Now there's... Yeah, this recent typhoon. I tell you, the situation here is extremely bad. It's like, you know, if a typhoon hit all of the islands all at once.
Right. When we've had our hurricanes, we've been lucky that Oahu, which is like Manila, has been solid. So we've been able to just get an incredible amount of support from our neighbor islands, our sister islands. But I think if it was the other way around, if we had a population center hit, you know, we are lucky that we don't have that many people here. It gets very, very difficult. I would think you would have septic issues. Is there disease or infection starting, and how is the weather?
That's correct. That's another health issue that's coming about, is the diseases. That's why they're trying to bury the corpses as fast as possible. The sanitation is a problem. There's no sewage. Because there's no sewage, that's another reason why, like, Tacloban is greatly affected by the lack of having clean water. Not to mention the looting that's going on now, which is it's understandable in a sense because people are starving and they're being, you know, they're hungry. They need something to eat.
Right.
But at the same time, it's causing problems.
It seems like, you know, when the situation is so dire as that money is less important than survival, right? How do you even pay for something that you might need?
Money is useless right now in those parts. I have a friend that I talked to last night about who just came back from Tacloban last night. And he was telling me that stores have nothing to sell and because they were all hit. And even if they did have something to sell, they don't want money. The store owners want other food because food is more important than money right now. So people have, you know, cash. If they have cash, their cash is useless right now because other people want other goods because they want to survive, particularly food. Food is extremely important right now.
Is it cold out there?
The weather is inclement. It's even right now in Manila. It's in that part of the region right now. It's very cloudy with sporadic rain. So the Air Force is also having some difficulty. The Philippine Air Force is also having some difficulty with landing in certain parts because, like I said, the airports are closed. They have to use, you know, eye contact in order to land. They can't use their instruments since there's no tower anymore.
Mm-hmm. And are
being
there...
And
are the runways clear enough to land?
The runways are clear enough to land right now. That was one of the first priorities that the Marines and the U.S. Marines and the Air Force had done, was to start to clear space for, you know, for landing and for dropping off relief goods. That was one of the first things that they had done. But because the weather right now is inclement with, you know, the sporadic rain and it's cloudy, it's also making it difficult.
What about the people who are survivors and displaced? Is there the capacity for the other islands to be able to, you know, open up to be able to receive these people who have no place to sleep, no place to be?
Ideally, some of the people have already been evacuated here to Manila, especially if they have urgent, especially if they have urgent medical needs or if there are children who lost both of their parents, because in many cases that's what had happened. We have a lot of orphans now because of what happened. As of right now, the government hasn't made any plans about resettlement, but yes, there is a capacity to locate them either to the island of Luzon or maybe to Mindanao. But that's also going to take time. The major priority right now is to get them to survive.
Right. And I'm almost speechless because...
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. This, I mean, just listening to this, it's just mind-blowing. Do we have any idea what the estimated death toll is? I mean, it's impossible to get a clear number anywhere, but...
If you ask the Philippine government, the official death toll, I think, is 1,942 as of right now.
Of what they have counted, but they're stating in the papers here, you know, at least 10,000?
Yeah, see, that's like the reports are all over the place.
Japanese and Australian aid organizations put the death toll at between 300,000 to 600,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Throughout the entire region.
So
yes.
I was going to say, how is Vietnam? Did they get hit as bad?
Oh, no. They got hit, but the storm had weakened by then. The typhoon had already weakened. And they had been extremely prepared because they had saw what had happened to the Philippines. And, in fact... Vietnam just donated $100,000 to the Philippine relief effort, money that they would have spent on their own relief, but they gave it to the Philippines instead because the Philippines needed it more.
You said $100,000?
Yes.
Okay, that's generous, and it sounds like a drop in the bucket. It sounds like you probably need billions.
I think the UN has estimated it to be about $6 billion for recovery.
Yeah, that's, it sounds like a lot, although money doesn't even, you know, really constitute recovery. if you have 300 to 600,000 lost lives, I mean, what a just unimaginable devastation to the culture, to the people, to everything.
Yeah, actually, when I'm not volunteering or not at school, what I've been doing is I've been going on my Facebook accounts and I've been answering questions from Filipinos from Hawaii and also from Filipinos here in Manila if I might have any information on their relatives in the South. Even myself, I believe that I have lost three relatives. I'm not sure.
I'm very sorry. And people can see on my Facebook posting for this show, Adam Keavi.
Manalo Camp.
Yeah, Manalo Camp. You could look at that. Also, callers can call in right now at 826-7771 and speak to Adam directly. Oh.
I wonder if KKCR hasn't already done this, but put up some websites for people to go to donate directly to the cause. You know, Red Cross, I'm sure, has a donation system set up already, and maybe they could post some of those websites on their website, you know, just try to get the word out as much as possible, because I'm sure, as all of us in this room are feeling after listening to you, Adam, incredibly helpless, and, you know, our hearts and prayers are going out to you and wondering and looking for a way to help, so trying to make it as easy as possible for people here on the in the States and in Hawaii to help would probably be a good thing.
Yes, there are listings in the paper, definitely all over Facebook. Very simple with Red Cross is 1-800-RED-CROSS or redcross.org. And, you know, it says larger community fundraising events on island here. They could call 808-739-8133. It almost just seems unimaginable how much help is needed. It's doctors, things to that effect. I do have a caller, and we will bring them up. Aloha, you are on the air.
I'm sure.
Hello, you're on the air.
Aloha. I just wanted to ask a question to Adam about concerning those orphans. I know in Oahu they have quite a program for orphans, Hawaii International Child.
Yeah.
And which is already set up. And just, gee, that's just one thing I'm thinking. Folks over here, they have it. You know, it's sometimes difficult to adopt children, but I don't know if in this kind of situation if folks over here can step up and just think of bringing a child into their home. I don't know. That's what comes up first at hand in my mind. Anyway, I'll take my answer off the air. Aloha.
Aloha. Yeah, the same thing occurred to me that, you know, there's probably people over here who would, you know, offer homes for these children. I know that it's tough to take kids out of their home country. Do you know, has there been talk about that, of kids being placed in other locations like Hawaii?
As of right now, no. I don't know any policy regarding that, but I know that that's going to be an issue very soon. The orphan issue, because I'll put it to you this way. I found out, I had a message from someone from here who was trying to find her older sister, who's 18 years old, and she finally found her older sister, but she found out that the entire aunt, the uncle, the parents, the grandparents, everyone was dead. Everyone. The only ones that were alive were the older sister, who's 18, another sister who's 5, another sister who's 6.
So sad.
Right now... Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
You know, it's very easy to, you know, go through facts and figures and whatnot. But, yeah, this is such a huge, huge tragedy. There's so many problems right now. And I don't necessarily blame the logistical problems, because there's just so many logistical problems because of the enormity of this.
Right, but any country would have a hard time managing, anywhere would have a hard time managing such devastation.
But, you know, I grew up in Hawaii. I grew up in Honolulu. I went to public school. And having lived here in the Philippines for a couple of years now, one thing I have learned about Filipinos here is that they are extremely resilient people. And despite whatever problems that occur, Filipinos will always arise to the occasion. They will always, always rise. And one of the things that, you know, struck me when I had visited one of the refugee centers here outside of Manila yesterday was these were refugees. They had lost everything. Some of them were crying, but after they stopped crying, they started to make jokes. You know, that's something that's very quintessentially mm-hmm. Filipino. That Philippines will survive. Filipinos are very strong people.
Yes. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, and we have Adam on the line with us reporting from Manila about what is happening. Jennifer Luck and Eric Cannon are also in the studio. We may have some folks from the Filipino community come in. It's a shy community. I'm trying to get them in here to really be able to talk about it. I know everybody's very concerned, and it's, you know, a devastating story. And yes, they, you know, humanity is resilient. Filipino people are hardworking, very resilient, very resourceful people. But it is hard to find any way to make light of such an intense and difficult situation. And I think that it's a warning to all of us, because this could probably happen anywhere. When have you looked at any of the information on what caused the strength of the storm?
Well, it depends on, well, this storm was very unusual in its intensity, but due to global warming, the Philippines has been hit by a lot more typhoons than it used to be. This past year, we had about 24 typhoons already. The Philippines is typhoon-prone, but not all typhoons make landfall. And in this year, we've had a very unusual activity in terms of typhoons. We also had unusual earthquake activity. But most people in the academic field believe that this might become the new norm because of global warming.
Yeah, we've seen increased storms kind of everywhere, but the best I can tell, this is the most intense storm that's happened in recorded history.
Correct. And this issue was also compounded by flooding, landslides, because this could get me into trouble, but another reason why devastation was so massive was because of logging and mining also in the country. The lack of stringent environmental protections also caused some of the casualties as well.
How about your agricultural practices? Is that a challenge in there, or is that pretty solid?
Agriculturally, no. It's right now we're trying to get out of. There's an anti-GMO movement in the Philippines as well. There's a gradual shift towards organic farming again that used to be practiced 100 years ago, but it's being redeveloped. Slowly, our agricultural sector is moving towards the right direction, slowly. But, yeah, another issue with this typhoon and the casualties was because of the lack of environmental enforcement in some areas, particularly logging.
So what about the building structures? Would being in cinder block buildings help? I mean, would that, or was it just so windy it wouldn't make any difference?
The houses that typically in that part of the region, they build out of wood, or if they build out of concrete and cinder blocks, they usually have usually use GI sheets as part of the roofing. You know, GI sheets, the metal sheets.
Yes.
most of the roofing flew away during the typhoon. And what didn't fly away, there were storm surges that came out during the typhoon, you know, from the ocean that also inflicted a lot of damage. Tacloban is a coastal city. A lot of the fishing villages, I think in terms of economics, the sector that's going to lose the most in the Philippines is fishing, because huge number of fishermen killed in this because their villages were by the coast. And most of the coastal villages are gone. Most of the death toll will probably end up being fishermen and farmers.
Mm.
Because that's the other thing that people are forgetting. It's the storm surges that came during and after the typhoon, which was like having a tsunami come right after having a hurricane.
Right. Right. It looked like that. I saw in the pictures, you know, the storm surge was so profound. And I think that is, you know, pretty much a common effect of very, very strong hurricanes or typhoons. You know, on the windward side, it just blows the ocean right over the area. It looks like some of those islands most impacted didn't have high elevation either.
True. That's very true. Tacloban is at sea level. Most of the cities in the south were at sea level. And most of the houses were built out of wood.
Yeah, they looked like decent structures, though. When I looked at those pictures, it reminded me of what we have here in Kauai.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Most the typical Filipino house in that part of the country is very similar to plantation-style houses.
Yeah, it looked like what we might have. So that was very interesting. Well, thank you very much. Eric, you had a call. Was that something to with this?
No.
Okay. All right. So do you have any final summary thoughts that you might want to share with the people of Kauai? I'm very thankful that you have called in and given us some knowledge from the ground, and we're very, very sorry, and, you know, we'll be working on what we can do to make it better. I just, it seems like it's not even easy to come up with ideas. I know that it's hard to just send a bunch of people over there, because then they're mm-hmm. competing for the food and the water and the shelter. You know, it seems like need people who are only the most strategically valuable.
Mm-hmm. It's true. But any sort of help that the people of Kauai, especially those from the Filipino community over there, can help and can assist, please, please help, because the situation is so dire. And I think LBC has also started to collect donations where you can ship things to the Philippines for free.
What is LBC?
Oh, the Filipino community would know what that is. It's a delivery service, cargo delivery service.
Oh, okay. And then I know also Hawaiian Telcom is giving free phone calls to the Philippines now, too, so people can call. Probably lots of other people besides the people from the Filipino community would like to help. So we'll just have to figure out ways that is appropriate for our community, you know, beyond
yes.
The cultural Filipino community to help, because this affects all of us, and we're very sorry. I have somebody coming in right now. Let me see if it is somebody from this community, because I've been expecting.
Oh.
Yes, I have. Hey, Willie. I've got Willie Ortel in here. And you're welcome in here. And so he's somebody who works with in our Department of Transportation. And thank you so much for driving up and helping out. So he's here. Willie, so we have Adam on, and we've been talking about what's, you know, been happening over there. It just sounds incredibly awful. And what part, I mean, you're definitely a part of the community, and maybe you're able to be the most specific about, like, what maybe your church is doing or different groups.
Can you speak English or Tagalog? Or?
You can speak whatever you want to speak.
Oh, actually, I came from the north, so... what this devastation came from is from the southern Philippines, and I'm not really familiar with the area.
With the region, yes, but like I know that your church is pretty involved in some of like trying to do the help effort, yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, our New Hope Kilauea in New Hope Church in Kilauea, we are trying to gather all the door-to-door items so that we can mail it out.
And then the Chamber of Commerce and the Filipino Chamber of Commerce, there's many different groups, about five or six different groups are all actually coordinating together. And I think that we will be hearing. And if we have an Akamai listener, call in and tell us when you might have an event coming up.
Well, I'm with the Kauai Filipino Chamber of Commerce too, so probably have to ask our president to get involved also.
Okay, yeah. So...
But in the meantime, being able to drop off food and goods at the church is a great way to help out. I know all of us have extra canned goods and rice in our cupboards that we're not using that we can go and drop off. And KKCR has a lot of listeners on the North Shore, so I hope everybody does that and takes some time to go over there. And
okay, they can drop off whatever goods at our New Hope in Kilauea by my marker 20.
Okay.
Yes, you're actually in Pila. Right there, right on the
yeah.
mountain side of the road, Pastor Jesse's place.
That's correct. Yeah, that's our church.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so have you been, how has the community that you're a part of been reacting to this? I know it's not right next to where your family is from. How long ago did you move to Kauai from the Philippines?
I moved here about 34 years ago.
Okay, you still got an accent pretty strong. He makes a big difference, though, mm-hmm. so you must have come pretty young then.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, thank you. Do you have anything that you want to say to Adam over there? Or, like, he's in Manila right now.
Oh, not right now.
Okay. All right. All right, Adam. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate all that you have shared with us.
No problem. Mahalo.
Mahalo. And we're going to say aloha to Adam. So, Willie, thank you. I mean, you're kind of coming in right at the very end of that session of our show. But you've been a big help this past week with our roads up here and all the flooding and the storming. And at the Department of Transportation, are you guys focused much in on climate change? Or do you guys track if we're seeing much increase or any strengths in the storms?
Well, I just play by the ear right now, you know. Yeah, I just play by the ear. If my boss said that the water is rising, we just go ahead and deploy our guys to monitor the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a really heavy rain this weekend. But, you know, what I remember from even 20 years ago, it seemed like it rained even heavier. You know, I know that the rainfall is less. What has worked for me pretty well in Kilauea is that it seems to be more days of the year it rains, even though it rains less. So that works out well for me with my plants. Mm-hmm. You know, that I still have plenty of water that I don't have to actually irrigate or water the plants.
Mm-hmm. That's why I was really surprised this past Saturday. My boss just called me about 12:15, and the river is still kind of low yet. So I went to Hanalei. After 15 minutes, I came back. Oh, the water is on the road already. That's how fast the water really rises up.
That's what always surprises me. I get the alerts on my phone from mm-hmm. USGS, and you know, one will come in, and then really quickly it'll be a foot and a half higher, right. In a matter of minutes. It's astounding the power of nature, and if the rain starts to come down really heavy in the mountains, how quickly the river down in Hanalei starts to rise.
Right, so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why when I get to the bridge, I even see that pig floating on the river already.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? You did?
Yes, yeah.
Mm, I know. I have before seen cows, and even there was a buffalo once. So
I saw one too. One
yeah,
time.
Yeah. It's and then, you know, you can only imagine what it's like over there in the Philippines right now, because it's not just human devastation, but all the different animals. You know, that's going to be really, really intense. Well, I know that you drove all the way up. You came to help from. Work at the Department of Transportation, and we're kind of closing out on this part of the conversation. Is there any other issues in the No. Filipino community that are important right now? I would really love to have more of that presence in this station, because Kauai Community Radio is a reflection. We have so much of a variety of people that have shows in here, but when I've been going around trying, thank you so much for coming in. I was trying
You're welcome.
To find somebody from the community to be able to help encourage greater callers in a shy community. So we have a call on the air. Let's see who it is. Aloha, you're on the air.
Thank you. Did I understand you to say that somebody was offering free transportation of clothing to the Philippines?
LBC, do you know what that is?
That's like a door-to-door boxes that you can drop it off. But in our church, we have the Millennium Express. They will come and pick it up at our church. I think one box costs about $65 or $70 for one box.
Okay. Are they giving you free shipping right now to the
yeah.
Philippines because of what's going on there?
I have no idea.
Well,
but I can find out.
That's
I
what,
can find out.
That's what the caller just did here, is that LBC is doing free shipping. But I think it would probably be best if it's all consolidated so that they go in, you know, bulk shipments.
I can find out.
Yes.
And here's the point. If the churches that have missions that wish to help, and if they have thrift shops, they can transport the clothing from their thrift shops through LBC. They can empty those stores and send them to the Philippines for free.
That's correct. And, you know, that might be something anything like that would want to be organized through the Filipino Chamber of Commerce, because there is a collection of organizations that are working together and working very closely with the distribution agencies. So right now it sounds like they can't even get in there to be helping people. The even more important than clothes is food, you know, that mm-hmm. they need to get food and water to people and medicine, and that's going to be what is dominating the cargo and the areas to be helping.
Willie, does your church, maybe because you're shipping and you're not sure if you can get it for free through the company that you use, also need monetary donations to help cover the cost of shipping all of these goods to the Philippines? Would that be helpful too?
That's why after this, I will try to call the guy that come and pick up the boxes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. Any other ideas, caller? Caller? I think you're breaking up. All right. Well, thank you, Willie. I know I made you drive all the way up here and raced all the way up here, and then we were kind of just concluding this portion of our show. You're welcome to stay and talk about other things.
Well,
but
I live in Kilavia anyway.
Yeah.
Not too far drive.
Not too far.
But I got a hard time finding this place.
Yeah. Yes.
They are hidden back here in amongst the trees.
KKCR is definitely tucked away. Yeah, we have a lot of points that are going to be covered on the air today. Jennifer's in here talking about the land trust. We're going to be also hearing from Lico Martin, and then also Leon Hsu, who is a political activist, and there's many issues that are coming up. We're looking at land use that's happening with a lot of the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. They're mostly, you know, public uses for everyone. how the public land trust comes into all of this, and even in global warming, is how do people who hold on to land be able to help keep it pristine? I do have a caller. You are on the air.
Yes, I just heard about the earthquake, whatever, and I didn't know, is it in Manila?
In southern Philippines.
In the Philippines? Where? What part of the Philippines is it?
It was in the very same area.
What same area? As what?
As where this hurricane happened.
What town? What
I know.
Place?
I'm trying to read and get... I have trouble pronouncing all the names of the islands because...
Can you spell it?
In a minute.
I think what area is in
so
Bohol.
Much.
They call it Bohol.
Yes, Bohol. That's where it was. Mm. And then
Bohol.
I didn't hear you.
Bohol.
B-O-H-O-L. Bohol.
That happened like a couple weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. And so that area, too, is called Visayan. Is that right, Visayan?
Visayan Island.
Visayan Island and that area in there. So
Visayan Island.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much for your program.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. Yeah, number of hits. They've had, what did he say, 26 typhoons this year. 26 typhoons. That's just amazing.
Yeah, unbelievable. And earthquakes.
And earthquakes. And so just having one pounding after another. So definitely prayers are up for them. And when you're using things like the land trust, basically... Tell us very quickly what land trust really means and why that can help slow down some of these types of challenges.
Play an important role in, you know, inevitably global warming and sea level rise and all of those as we face those challenges. So the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust is a private nonprofit organization. We operate like any other private nonprofit. We have a board of directors, an executive director and staff, and we basically purchase land. Either we purchase it in fee, or we purchase something called a conservation easement, which I can go into more detail later. Our land is donated to us, and we protect it in perpetuity from development. And I think that land trusts in the future, in the next 30 to 50 years, could play a really important role in trying to ease the effects of sea level rise and global warming. And a way to do that is to begin to secure some of those coastal areas so there's not homes and development along the coastal areas that inevitably would be hit the hardest during storms like the one we just saw in the Philippines, or when the sea level does begin to rise. So securing some of those coastal areas is a role that I think the Land Trust could play in, again, trying to ease some of the effects of global warming in the future. Trying to create a buffer zone, basically, between the ocean, the sea, and the populated areas.
That's right. And, like, there is that little piece that you guys have right down there at Kahili Quarry. I see that there's been some stuff that has been killing the trees right there. And so that's really important to not have that happen. What I really keyed in on that Adam shared was about challenges like the logging and the mining. And it's just
exactly.
Like, oh, my gosh, because... this way that we build and the way that we log. So we have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, hi. Yeah, I represent the Pihi Biking Club here on Kauai. That's the Philippines, Hawaii.
Okay.
That's our road biking club. We just reserved a date at Kukui Grove next weekend on Sunday to hold a fundraising event for the Typhoon Yolanda Relief Fund.
Oh, kind of tell thing. Us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we just decided that today. I'll have one of the guys actually email to you the flyer, the poster thing that they did up and stuff. And we connected up with the Filipino Chamber of Commerce to invite them if they'd like to get involved with us. Okay. So they have a meeting going on tonight, too.
But okay.
Tentatively, right now, we've reserved Kukui Grove on the 24th. I went over there today and spoke with them. We're reserving that date, the 24th.
Is that a Sunday?
Sunday.
Sunday,
right.
The 24th.
Any specific time, or is it going to be all day?
We're not sure yet, because this is kind of, it'll probably start maybe like about 10. I'm not even sure yet, because it's something we decided today, kind of. And we have a meeting this evening at 5:30 to be more definite on the times and everything like that. And then I'm just putting the word out to anybody in music or hula, whoever wants to come and help out and perform there, that'd be fine to call, right? And we're just looking for the whole community to come together.
Do you have a phone number that they can call?
Yeah, they can call Kenny Ishii. My number is 346-7226.
346-7226. That's Kenny.
Right.
And
right.
I know that what was really nice when we had Hurricane Iniki is different groups had different elements that was super helpful, like Aloha Island Air. They brought over baby formula and diapers.
Right.
You know, and other different churches came over with, like, chainsaws, you know, and work crews. And I think that in the aftermath, you know, not these first, right now they probably need doctors, nurses, and things like that, but right behind it, you need the work crews to go in and just be picking up. And after Iniki,
we want to start off initially, I think, once, like with the Chamber of Commerce, once they put their heads together, right, and then the whole community comes together, put all our heads together, then you start taking the first step, second step, you know, all the way up, you know, to try to help, you know. And we're willing to, our bike club was formed by a bunch of Filipino guys originally. That's why Philippines, Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
But our thing right now is to connect up with all the parts of the community. You know, I do a lot of stuff for the Coconut Festival, things like that, all kind of different events. But my thing, too, is to reach out to the entertainment part of our community to come down and, you know, perform. I don't care if it's for 10 minutes. I don't care, you know. But everybody coming out to give. I mean, we're looking at the churches coming out. And anybody who wants to get involved, please call me.
Okay, and again, that's Kenny 346-7226.
Right. And then I can even give you my email address, too.
Okay, why don't you do that?
It's Aloha, A-L-O-H-A, Kiyo, K-I-Y-O, @ HawaiianTel.net.
Okay, say that one more time.
It's Aloha, Kiyo, K-I-Y-O, @ HawaiianTel.net.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for all of that.
Okay, and I'll be calling you guys back again, I'm sure.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right.
Aloha. All right, and you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL, Holly Eva, Kauai Soapbox Live is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Bali High, Anahola Stringed Instruments, Aya's Gardens, and Al Pastor Tacos.
Since 1978, providing personalized real estate sales and rental services. Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, also supports KKCR and the Kauai Independent Food Bank. More information at balihigh.com or by calling 826-7244.
Anahola Stringed Instruments, still making guitars, ukulele, and violins one at a time from Kauai's ancient koa. Every tree has its own song. Time-honored designs and precision-built custom orders, beginning and master instrument building classes, prompt and complete setup, repair, restoration, and reforestation. Anahola Stringed Instruments proudly supports KKCR. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. I have Jennifer Luck in here, Eric Cannon, and myself, Felicia. And we have two amazing individuals on the line right now, and they're going to come on together. One is our illustrious Liko Martin, often in here with us. Let me see if I pull you upright, Liko. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, and then so let me get your friend. Oops. Leon, call right back.
Okay, let me do a little bit of introduction to the person who's going to call back. A very old friend, musically, we came to know each other about the time that Waimanalo Blues was written in the 70s. He and his wife, Malia, are a singing group, a duo from way back, have done a lot of community work and stuff like that, and as our lives have ended up, he is, I'd say, very, like when I called you, Felicia, he's a person who has been in Geneva, who frequents Geneva, is, I would say, kind of an ambassador for the Hawaiian issues and very much a humanitarian and looks very seriously at all sides of the issues. He's well-respected in Washington, D.C., and he's, I'd say, at the forefront of the information that we need here in Hawaii to, as a result of, say, rectifying some of the things that happened 130 years ago in the kingdom that caused massive displacement and the condition of the land deteriorating to the point that it is in today, that if a calamity such as hit the Philippines, were to hit here in the form of, say, tsunamis, which are inevitable, we would be quite short-handed for supplies, being that our mainstay agricultural crops, taro and sweet potato, and the management of our forests here and the waters have been so... Leon, that's, you know, about the issue I'm trying to piece together to some of the parties who are there, but with the land trust, how do we entrust the land? How do we restore it and make it productive for food out of an infrastructure that primarily exists? Fish ponds, coolers, taro, sweet potato, mainstay crops, you know.
And
reforestation.
Leon,
yeah.
Leon is on the air.
Okay. So anyway, this is Leon. Leon, I was kind of given an introduction.
Okay.
And
aloha.
And relating it to your work in internationally and how that would affect, I'd say, in Hawaii, restoring the land used, restoring the native tenants. So give us the latest from, you know, work us from where you've been. I know that decolonization is something that is seriously being looked at. Can you speak to us about this?
Sure, yeah. Okay, well, just to give you an overview, and aloha, everybody. It's good to be back on Kauai, and it's nice to be on this show. Just really appreciate the time that you are giving me. But anyway, it's fairly complex and fairly extensive of what we're trying to do. Initially, our goal is, of course, to restore the independence of the Hawaiian kingdom, the Hawaiian nation. And in doing so, we've used many different kinds of opportunities in the international arena, like the United Nations, European Union, and others, in order to tell our story. But in doing so, we also have picked up the stories of many other people, particularly indigenous people, and found out that, of course, we have many of the same kinds of stories and things that we're facing, the same kinds of issues. So on a global level, indigenous peoples have been, of course, relegated to the back, and the lands have been taken and used in many, many different abusive ways, without the permission of the people of the land. And this has become now quite a big crisis around the world, mainly because the misuse of the land has also created problems for the rest of society that's misusing the land as well. And so it's kind of a curious thing, because on the one hand, industry and trade is still trying to maintain its accessibility to the resources that are controlled by the people of the land, and they're still trying to get those resources away more and more. But at the same time, they're beginning to realize, or the world is beginning to realize, that kind of the more socially conscious communities around the world, and not all indigenous communities, but they're beginning to realize that the abuse of the land is now beginning to backfire, and they're going to have to do some wise use and some management and sustainable management of their land, of the lands that they had abused. And curious enough, now they're looking toward the indigenous people to say, oh, you folks know how to do this, so can you help us out? So the indigenous peoples in some ways are sitting in a position of being able to regain not only the respectability, but the actual control of their land. So it's quite an interesting situation. So at the United Nations, for instance, I spent a couple of weeks in September attending a number of conferences and seminars, and as well at the General Assembly, that has to do with sustainability. They're trying to adopt sustainable goals after 2015. Apparently, the goals that they had adopted 10 years ago are now expiring, so to speak, and so they're trying to reassess what has happened and adopt some new goals. So we are in a very interesting position of being able to guide and perhaps influence these new goals that they're going to adopt. And at the same time, it plays into our hands in that we can make more, I wouldn't say demands, but we can be more assertive of our right to control our own land. So this falls into the whole independence and decolonization scheme of things. Now, for those who don't really know what decolonization means, when the United Nations was formed, there were 56 member states of the United Nations. Those were recognized as sovereign states, and they formed the United Nations. And the rest of the world were recognized as colonial, that many colonies and possessions, territories of these other sovereign states. So the United Nations formed with the intention of providing a means for the people to be self-governing. They call it self-determination. And in many cases, it meant decolonization. They had to become, to stop being colonies of the administrative state. So the decolonization process began. It was a bit messy at times, but sometimes it worked nicely. So today, there are only 16, well, up until 1986, there were 16 nations left on the decolonization list, 16 territories to be decolonized. And among them were Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, French Polynesia, and a number of others. But the problem is that the stronger states, like the United States, Canada, Australia, France, Great Britain, decided that they would slow down the decolonization process as if everything's done, and they would freeze it in place. So it's been frozen for almost 30 years. But recently, this past May, French Polynesia got re-inscribed as a nation to be decolonized. So now there's 17 nations. And the significance of this is that it kind of broke a deadlock.
Can you list those 16 or 17 nations?
Not right offhand, okay. But there are several Pacific, like the ones I mentioned in the Pacific, Guam and American Samoa, and French Polynesia, which just got relisted. Let's see, and then there are a number in the Caribbean. So they're mostly island states and a couple in the Indian Ocean. But you know, it's sort of like time forgot us. It's like we're too small to be significant. But what's the interesting thing is that Hawaii has been also pushing to be decolonized, or to actually to be on a list, to be considered to be, so we would have the option of self-governance. And the reason we are pushing for this is because we were improperly removed from the list. We had been on the list in 1946, and then in 1959, the U.S. improperly removed us from the list, claiming we had chosen to become integrated as a state, a domestic state of the United States. So Hawaii and Alaska, which had been on the list, are now, were taken off the list and then listed as part of the United States. So that the significance of French Polynesia being relisted means that a country can get back on the list, even though it has been off for many years. So we're pushing for that, thing to happen for us, that is to be decolonized or to be put on the decolonization list.
So I'm hearing you, and then just trying to want to bring it to some immediate issues.
Yes.
And Leon Hsu is how I would say your name, right?
Hsu.
Hsu.
Yeah, S-I-U. Uh-huh.
Leon Hsu.
Yeah.
So you've done this work at a global level, and then so just localizing it pretty tightly for a moment.
Here
on Kauai, I'm seeing that the Department of Hawaiian Homelands is being utilized for things that we could argue are for the public good, but it seems that it's for the broad public, not at all necessarily Hawaiians, and so many Hawaiians have not been given their land that's on the list. And so what I was noticing today, and then I've also had Akamai listeners calling to my attention, so I just want to be able to list a few of these and see, like, when what you're speaking of to me seems very broad, and this is like the broad stroke sweep of perhaps the direction that Hawaii might be able to move in.
Mm-hmm.
But Kauai today is looking at several different issues. One of them I see in the paper here, they listed that the Rural Utilities Service, we have something called Kauai Island Utilities Cooperative. It's supposed to be a cooperative. Mm-hmm. I try very hard to pay attention to what they're doing, but I see that they have, you know, found no significant impact in a 53-acre parcel right next to Anahola with a 5-acre service center with, you know, driving, you know, parking lots, equipment storage, and then a service center for basically our power company. So that seems to be right adjacent to Anahola. And so I see here that they have got their environmental assessment done, everything, and this is the notice saying there's no significant impact. So I was a little surprised about that because I go to all these KIUC meetings. I knew they were doing a solar project over there. I didn't realize that they were going to be putting in a big park. And at the same time, like on water, we get kind of, you know, cornered in all directions. And there is benefit. It's not like there is no benefit to the community. It's the Department of Water, also, I believe, on Department of Hawaiian Homelands, is doing some very significant water access issues, like horizontal drill. There's like a 2-mile horizontal drill right into the heart of the island that is under consideration, and that has many people concerned, not just Hawaiian people. I see that now they're having a special board meeting on November 14th, this Thursday at 3 p.m. But here it is an executive session. So on the agenda is almost empty, except for this executive session that says the board may, when deemed necessary, hold an executive session on any agenda item without written public notice if the executive session was not anticipated in advance. So you don't even get to know what they're talking about. You just know that they're going to be talking about something that they're not saying. And then coming up very shortly after that for Tuesday on 11/26 from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Kapaa Elementary School, I see that we have four Mauka reservoirs on Department of Hawaiian Homeland's lands, and I work hard to try and understand all these things, and frankly, I don't totally. We had a Reservoir Safety Act, and so this is the Department of Land and Natural Resources, but they're, you know, discussing what they're going to do with these Mauka reservoirs, these four reservoirs, as well as the runoff water. So when I see their water kuleana paper that they put out at another meeting recently, you know, it's overwhelming to understand every single thing that's coming out. It seems to me the best that I can tell on this is that the Hawaiian coffers would get 30% of the rent money on this land, but that this, if there's an Akamai listener that's out there that understands a little bit better, that they're going to be managing these waters for a lot of different usage. So it just goes to public trust use of the water. So that doesn't say that it wouldn't necessarily be redirected to completely different areas. You know, it's so vague. These things are almost
almost blank checks.
Almost blank checks, yeah. So it makes me nervous, and somebody might say to me as a transplant, Malahini, whatever word we would use for me, I might benefit from the water. I probably would benefit from this power station put right there. But still yet, my theory is what's good for the Kanaka people is good for all of Hawaii. And so providing homes and a place to be seems like on the top of the list that we would be keeping our host culture intact. So I just have little flags that come up when I see these land uses that, you know, I'm not totally sure about. We also have, I believe it is on Department of Hawaiian Homelands, at least part of it is our new landfill and resource recovery park. That's a big piece in Ma'alo. And again, probably good for the island as a whole, I guess, but it seems like we are treating this remnant of land that has been set aside for the Hawaiians as just for broad public benefit rather than targeted Hawaiian use. And Liko, can you correct me on that? Am I not understanding what I'm reading well?
Well, okay. Interesting.
I mean, are you aware of all those things?
Yes, I'm aware of what you're talking about. I've been, quietly, silently mulling over the various things that are happening and, you know, some of the things. But since Leon's on the phone, okay, now get back to decolonization, okay?
Colonization, right? All of those are examples of colonization.
What prompted French Polynesia being put back on the list under Chapter 11? Okay. And in Hawaii's case, what would prompt the international community to take notice, serious notice, that that perhaps as one issue that they might look at is the upending and the disruption of the natural flow of resources pertaining to stabilizing the environment, less runoff, less environment, to enhancing the fisheries, and to stabilize the global need, which is protein.
Yeah.
Of which our goby, as an example, which is called the o'opu, is the only where, this is the only place it's found in the entire world, is the beginning of the food chain, okay? All through the nursery that exists in the Polynesian Triangle. Now, okay, now here, you know, we have such a tremendous infrastructure that is still here that has been disrupted. Okay, what is going to prompt? What could bring on decolonization? Okay, in the most upfront political way, but in a soft way. How do we get the use of these lands restored?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know there's a woman there from the land trust. Okay, and my first question is, are there lo'is there? We can be concerned about the shorelines, but while the forests are being dug up for subdivisions, you know, priced homes for people that they're not providing an industry. They're not industrial. The retirement community has surpassed the visitor industry. According to the census, 16% of the jobs are with tourism. Manufacturing and basically minerals are not even being looked at. But there's an infrastructure. So decolonization now, how would that happen?
Okay. I think that this ties, you know, the questions that Felicia had as well as what you're stating. And the term decolonization simply means a radical way of being self-governing or self-determination. Now, what does that mean? That means that the people of the land or the people who are going to be self-determining are the ones that actually make the decision. See, part of the problems with what you stated as far as water use and power use and things like that, Felicia, mm-hmm. is that the Hawaiians don't have a voice in it. We're being told what's good for us. We're being told what the plan is, but we're not actually being consulted or we're not actually being asked our consent.
That's my concern.
Right. And that's where self-determination and decolonization comes in, because we want to get to the point where we make the decision. And also, once we have gotten the political clout, let's say under decolonization or under self-determination, to make the decisions, we can actually undo some of the bad decisions that were made as well. So it's all tied together, and the idea is that self-determination means that the people get to consent or get to agree on how our resources are going to be used and who's going to use it and for what purposes. And we have the veto power.
So, Leon?
Yeah.
So what's flashing with me is now, you know, this word decolonization, independence,
yeah.
kind of strikes fear in a lot of people.
Right, so, right.
Even the Kanaka themselves. What are we talking about?
Okay.
I look favorably as restoring this independent status so that the multiple dreams of a lot of people and the beauty and everything of why Hawaii is so important and is such so important to them personally, can we achieve our dreams independently? Or what path takes us so that we can all be on the same path and be
right.
vulnerable? Okay?
Right.
And so to not be afraid of, but to embrace what can happen if there's, we're looking at restoring the political and eliminating the apartheid, the condition of apartheid, which is the condition of apartheid and the human rights suffering. And given you know, any kind of emergencies, it could be something that could really send hope, you know, bring eyes to look at Hawaii in a different way. But
And so, you're listening to Lico Martin, Leon Hsu, with Jennifer Luck, Eric Cannon, and Felicia on KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. You know, and this is the important thing to remember is that this decolonization does not admit or confirm that we were at all colonized. Like you said, Lico, we're looking at restoring our ability to govern ourselves as we had in the 19th century. And that had been taken away for a whole century and a half, or century and a quarter. So the idea is that Hawaiians need to be able to make the decisions as to how our lands are used and all that. And that we can make good decisions. And we can, so the idea is that I'd like to report that we are very close to accomplishing the political and the legal part of restoring our nation. But restoring our nation, building an independent and a healthy nation, is up to the people
so
on the ground. Yeah.
When you say you're close to it with the UN? I mean, how are you close to it?
And international law, yes.
Okay.
It would take quite a bit of time to explain. But we are close to the point where the international community is going to start pointing at the United States and say, you don't have authority to rule in Hawaii. And at that point, once the United States authority is questioned, then we spring forward with the still existent Hawaiian Kingdom, the nation in continuity. And that Hawaiian Kingdom actually comes back to life. We already are living. We already are here, but it becomes apparent once the curtain has been pulled aside by the United States curtain has been over. Then people will see us as an independent state.
So, playing devil's advocate on that, though,
yes.
Let's just say, okay, the United States backs out. What keeps China from taking us over? That's my fear. It's like, okay. You get rid of one, and then instantly somebody else. Like, we look at all this empire building that's happening around the world.
But that's assuming that we're totally helpless and that we don't know what we're doing and we can't handle ourselves. When we handle ourselves beautifully in the 19th century, and we also have a lot of examples to look at today as to how small nations have handled themselves. Recently, China has not taken over any nation, neither has the United States, neither has Russia. So all the big guys, I mean, their policy is not to take over nations anymore. It's really to continue to gain some kind of economic benefit from those nations.
And Crete and Cyprus might be examples of ones that have been colonized for centuries island nations that have recently had their sovereignty back.
Right. And I mean, and there's when the UN started out with 56 nations in 1945-1946, they now have 193 nations in the UN. And that's not all the nations in the world. As you know, Tibet and Taiwan and others are not recognized by the UN. So there's probably another dozen or 20 more nations that are actual nations that are not recognized. So over 200 nations in the world on the original 56, and most of those nations came out of a decolonization process. So there's a tremendous amount of empathy and experience by those nations to support Hawaii's bid for independence. And on the other hand, it's up to us. You know, we're the ones, knowing that we are a nation of continuity, we're the ones that have to assert that.
So surely you have noticed that Kauai is showing a lot of spunk lately.
Yes.
And that we have thousands of people really mobilized on the agriculture issue.
Right.
When you're here on the island, what reason are you here for? Are you going to testify on Thursday at the county council?
I wasn't planning on it.
Maybe you should consider coming, because I think that, you know, what we have to really work on is unification in so many ways. And this, what's happening, and I'm just bringing it up because this is like a burning issue too. Like this Thursday, when we are working on this veto override, we had, it's called the Right to Know Pesticide Bill.
I'm familiar with it, yes.
Yeah, so it is really asking for the smallest step of change. It's asking for disclosure of the poisons that are being used. It's not saying stop poisoning it. It's saying, okay, have a bigger buffer zone around schools and houses and hospitals. It seems like a very small step. Also, just simply revealing the poisons that they've used, it doesn't cause people to lose their jobs. It doesn't cause them to stop the application of these restricted use pesticides. So this very, very small step that has mobilized literally thousands of people, there's probably been up to about 5,000 people who have put a lot of energy into this. And, you know, the mayor overrode a 6-to-1 support of that bill and then tip the hand on the legal cards. That seems less of an issue because we've had many people examined that the concerns that were tipped is pretty much just straight out of the playbook of the biotech industry, so it's not like really giving them anything they didn't already have. But this Thursday will be another big mobilization of people, and there are many people from Niihau and Hawaiian people who actually work for the biotech industry. It's the Hawaiian population on the island is relatively small. And on the west side, many of them are employed in this industry. So for them, they have a very real fear that they are going to lose their jobs. And so, again, I'm pulling it from the broad picture back to the narrow picture because I know that, like, my listener and what's really strident right now, we have, you know, we got to work with the trees as well as the forest. And so I'm hoping that you come to that meeting. I mean, like, you might think about that on Thursday because...
Okay.
And Liko, you too, because... I don't see these things as really separate, you know.
They're not, and that's what I'm saying. You can, the assertion on the local level is this is a prime example of the people asserting what they want, and that's self-determination. You know, it's basically saying we don't give any consent for our food to be unlabeled so that we don't know what that's in.
Or our land to be poisoned.
Right. And to be used for abusive, you know, for poisonous food that's being sent out. So,
these massive international corporations coming in and determining how to use the resources here, transitioning to more of a community-based resource management where the community has the determination and hopefully uses, you know, traditional ecological knowledge in determining how to use those resources.
Very good.
Yeah.
So the assertion on the local level is actually a prime example of that at work, that the people themselves have an ability to stop or to change the direction of things they're going because it's dangerous or it's harmful. And I think that this is a great example. And I think Kauai needs to be applauded for it. And the rest of the nation, Hawaii, is looking at this Kauai because of the leadership we've taken. So it's not going unnoticed.
Well, I was at the bar the other night listening to my son play music, and sounds like a bar troll. I'm a band mom, but there was some people there that were on vacation, and they were like, oh, you're Felicia, and they were asking me, and they've been following this stuff on Facebook, and they're from the East Coast, Pittsburgh, and then I think a town in Vermont. And they say our battle here is really getting people's attention over there in the East Coast. It's like something they would be talking about in the gym, that people really are looking. And in their case, it was almost like activism tourism. It brought them here somewhat, you know, because it's empowering to them that people are standing up. And we have to find, like, how do we find that balance of holding home rule? When I gave the example of Crete and Cyprus, those guys got their independence, but it's not like all of a sudden there was some real big radical change, you know, that people didn't start living like they did 400 years ago or something like that. There was just a shift in the power structure to be more localized, but it didn't seem like populations moved or that there were radical changes. And so that might be a case here. You know, I mean, I think the whole world needs to be doing better land management practices. And
I think there's slowly a shift happening, certainly on Kauai. You know, you have examples like what they're doing in Haena with, again, community-based resource management of the fisheries and setting rules at the community level and working with DLNR and the Board of Land and Natural Resources and incorporating, you know, traditional knowledge into those rules. And so that it seems to me that at least slowly that realization that a top-down approach is not the best approach, but a ground-up approach a better approach.
What gives you that confidence? Last year when we had the Public Land Development Corporation and when we have just had the mayor, I'm sure he's a nice man. He's probably leveraged some unbelievable way. People use the word sold out. It doesn't feel true to the character of him that I know, but somehow he was leveraged to stand against what I consider the county's best interest and his own best interest. That doesn't seem like we're moving in the right direction. That seems like from the top down, there's pretty strong pushback.
You know, I said it was slow, and I didn't say it was without setbacks. I think that there are, but I do think that that if you look at the bigger picture, if you look at the community involvement on this issue, how many more people came out for the march in favor of passing the bill than any other time at least in my knowledge, in the history of Kauai, and the council voting in favor of it, and all of the good work that has happened. I think if you look at the big picture, in general, we're moving in the right direction. There's always going to be those people that push back a little bit. I mean, it's never going to happen overnight, but the fact that this, you know, island community is rallying around so close together this one issue, I think is a good thing, and is showing not only people's awareness about how land is used and the importance of how land is used and using it in a responsible way and what can happen if it's not used in a responsible way, but not just complaining about it, getting involved and demanding
to reclaim home rule, which is what this really is about. And it's about individual sovereignty. And as we pull back towards home rule, then so these men are talking about that next step of, you know, and I think that, like, the state of Hawaii and the nation of the United States is being, you know, the worst exhibit A when they keep putting forward rules and laws that want to do an end run around what the people want in different places. We saw it in Washington State. We're seeing it. And Hawaii isn't the only state that sits there and goes, you know what? We're not sure we want to be a state anymore. There's that sentiment is not unique to Hawaii.
Right. What's unique about Hawaii is that we never were a state. And exposing that then puts us in a much better position to reclaim our nationhood.
And you were never a state. We were never a state because this was a friendly constitutional monarchy that was in agreement. That's the difference, because I think if you talk to the indigenous people of Arizona or Colorado, they probably never volunteered to become a state, but they are a war acquisition, whereas this was something different than that?
Yes, absolutely. We were an independent nation with treaty relationships with not only the United States, but 45 other foreign nations, and fully recognized as a sovereign state. And the takeover by the United States, actually, the takeover was really engineered by some traitors within the Hawaiian Kingdom, but the United States, of course, was complicit in it and benefited the most from it. So, but the fact is that the Hawaiian Kingdom was never acquired by the United States. The people had definitely said they did not want to be annexed in 1897, and the U.S. went ahead and took over anyway, and that was just the sheer force of power. But over time, see, that does not legitimize anything. All it does is it says the United States is a very powerful country, and it can occupy any place it wants to, and the rest of the world kind of shrank back.
Mm-hmm. I'd say not, that sounds accurate.
Yeah, but we're not in that position anymore. The rest of the world does not see the U.S. as infallible or so powerful that it can get away with anything. And we've seen so many other instances of very, very strong authoritarian governments like the Soviet Union, like France and others, actually break apart. And so, we're living in a different time where the possibility or the probability of our being able to regain our independence is a lot stronger than it was at any time in the last 120 years.
Well, that's very well stated. We are getting close to the end of our show. Jazz with John will be on soon. I would like to have you both basically give me a summary. I have a couple other callers waiting, and then Jennifer, I'm going to let her have a chance to speak on what her interests are. But I'm really glad that you guys were able to come into this show in a last-minute format, and thank you so much. We're honored. So
thank you. And if I may, I'd like to make an announcement of a couple of other meetings we're having here on Kauai. I tried to send it to you, but for some reason my computer email thing wouldn't work, or internet wouldn't work. So on this Friday, November 15th, I'm going to be doing a talk story presentation at Koloa Union Church in Koloa. And we're also going to be showing the film Hawaii, A Voice for Sovereignty.
So yeah. Friday, Koloa Union Church at what time?
6:30 p.m. So my talk will be first, and then we'll show the film after that.
Okay, sounds great.
And then on Saturday morning, I'm going to be doing a talk story. Again, it's going to be interactive, and it's going to be at Island School, Saturday, November 16th, 9 a.m., Island School, Freer Halau. And people know where Island School
mm-hmm.
is.
That's right behind Kauai Community College, and so right. at the Halau building. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, on Saturday at 9 a.m.
And so is it going to be the same discussion, essentially?
Not really. The one on Friday night is going to be a more condensed version, and the one on Saturday is going to be more extended. And I'm going to be giving updates on international initiatives, on legal challenges, international legal challenges, and grassroots activism.
That is this Saturday, the 16th.
That's correct.
And so I'm just making a suggestion. Come on Thursday. There'll be a lot of people down there, even if you talk story.
Sure, and I'll hand out some flyers.
Yeah.
And talk story with people there. And, I'd love to. So I'll find out the times and all that and be there.
People will probably be there all night long and out in the daytime is how it's been. It's been a pretty interesting set of circumstances, and a small room that can hold 65 people with probably 700 or 800 people who want to be in it.
Great. So, I love it.
Okay. So, Liko, my dear friend, any final words from you?
Oh, well, I'm grateful for the rain.
Oh, nice.
That have come and, although the little stream that I'm by since the floods earlier this year up above Kapa'a on all the development, we haven't seen any fish in the river all year because there's just a lot of mud. So, the little things that we can do to survive this and just I'm so grateful for Leon, Felicia, to share this, my acquaintance and respect for Leon, and to just shed some light, I guess, on, you know, what, you know, if we're looking into the future, like the land board, in one of their papers, the water board said, well, we're going to share our 200-year plan with you. And when I read that, I said, well, 200 years forward, if we look back 2,000 years, mm-hmm. to see how the water was used, you know, power for what? Industry. You know, the retirement industry is here. It's basically an industry of garbage. How do we manage our waste? How do we do these things? So to embrace the concept of restoring Hawaiian land management practices under Hawaiian law through a re-recognition of as a nation state, why not?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
A lot of food came from Hawaii during the Civil War. So Hawaii always had surplus. Now we don't have a surplus.
We're so capable. We're so capable.
Yeah. And like Uncle Vince, when I first met you, Felicia, Uncle Vince with the Heritage River in Hanalei.
Yes.
When we sort of, you know, when he saw what was coming, he said, well, Liko, he says, they won't know it until the well runs dry. I hope he's, you know, in that picture, in that collage of things, what he saw is a warning to us. You know, our forests are out of control, and the lands are not productive because the people have been removed from the land.
So, well, we're working on reclaiming it, and I'm definitely part of that team, and it's happening. So slow by slow, but there it is awakening.
Thank you, Leon, so much, man.
Oh, mahalo,
so to have known you in my life, and carry on the good work. If there's little things that we can do, you know, to support internationally, you know, please let us know.
Well, this is the battle here is exactly what supports it, because what you're doing here locally is what really exemplifies what I'm telling them.
In other words, in a specific case, the GMO issue.
Yeah.
Could something like that draw international attention in the
environment? It is already drawn international attention.
It has drawn international attention. And the other thing that it's done is it's been really very unifying across the races, the ethnic groups, the economic groups.
Right.
You know, each side of the island. I mean, and there is some hurt and stress for the people who work in the industry, and we have to love them up and help them to pass through this, and I think that they will see that it's all going to be okay.
Yeah, well said.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, Felicia, I have exactly 40 baby kukuina trees that I recently found that were going to be endangered of being weed whacked.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because a couple of weeks before that, I was talking to someone and I just said, well, you know, they said, well, what do you think, Liko? And I said, well, I'm going to put an order in for 500,000 kukuina trees.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, when I went up to Anahola to visit my cousin, I looked on the ground and there would probably be a good 10,000 there.
Yeah.
Talking about jobs. You know, reforestation, the kukuina, largest stand of kukuina forest in mm-hmm. the islands, in the Hawaiian Islands, once extended from Anahola, which are the remnants of it, all the way to Kilauea, when it was mowed down for pineapple. So if we're talking about water, you know, talking even about jobs now, the people I know, you know, I mean, it's kind of this, people are forced to take whatever they can get. I'm into kukuina trees. If anybody's got a bunch of little planters, call Felicia.
Okay, and regenerations, and we'll help you out.
Yeah, I mean, you
all
know.
Right.
I mean,
okay. So, thank you guys so much.
Okay. 100 trees per acre, I'll match.
Okay, ahoy ho.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So I have an extremely patient caller, and then this will be the last call that we'll take, and we'll take it quickly, and then you're going to get a few minutes to put your pitch out, and then another time I'll have you come in. Aloha, you are on the air. Let's see, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you for holding.
Hi, Felicia, it's Lori, and I really, really feel positive that the council will override the veto 6-0. Kauai is unconquered, and I have really good feeling about it. It's just incredible how the community is pulled together. It is a little, it could be somewhat discouraging when the mayor receives a letter from Global Ag Services, but that's just
in
a
the
tactic.
Paper.
Yeah, that's just a tactic, and Kauai is not going to go global. Kauai is just, we're too small and too beautiful to just head that direction, to be globalized. I just can't see that. And Angela and I took a tour of the West Side, and it was a real sombering tour, but it was incredible how many of the fields are so close to the road when you go up to Polahalli. Tourists were there. We talked to them. We reached out to them. They had no idea that those were GMO fields. And I really feel like...
Weren't there signs?
No signs. No signs whatsoever. Now, back in the day... There used to be. Remember how they used to have signs
yes.
everywhere?
So did they take them down?
They took them down. They took them down. You would never know that those are GMO crops and you know, test fields. So that was pretty interesting. And I just, my theory is if they can make us wear seatbelts and regulate that, then they can, to protect us, they can protect us from the pesticides. If they can tell us we can't use our cell phone when we're driving to protect us, then... They can protect us from these pesticides. So we also saw quite a few houses for sale over there, too, so I thought that was kind of interesting. We did see signs that support the bill, and then we did see a sign that was, you know, the corporate-made sign that says, you know, the no GMO on it. And my whole theory is that this is what's called a soft kill. It's a very slow, gradual. It's like the cigarette industry, exactly like that. We won't know really everything until the years pass by, and that's why, like Dr. Lauren Pang said, we need to be precautious.
Well, thank you so much for that report.
Thank you, aloha.
Aloha. Okay, Jennifer, you're going to have to give us your. Got about 2 or 3 minutes.
Talk fast.
Well, give us the high points of it, and I promise I'll have you next week or the week after next week.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on today. It was a really interesting, informative conversation to listen in on. And so right now the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust is in the middle of our own membership drive. We're hoping to expand our donor base, and we started the membership drive on Earth Day this year, and it's for the first time that we've ever done one. So the memberships on Kauai have been lagging a little bit, and we're hoping to sign up about 100 folks by the end of the year.
So when somebody signs up for being a member, does that mean they put their land in the land trust, or does that mean they give money?
That's just a donation. They would give money. We have different membership levels, just like Sierra Club.
So you take that money and you utilize it to buy land that needs protection.
We do. So we would utilize it for multiple purposes, to steward the land that we have already under protection, because we made a promise to protect it in perpetuity, and that's an audacious promise to make. So we want to make sure that we have the resources that enable us to steward it properly and responsibly in perpetuity, to acquire new lands as needed, and then also, of course, to help cover operational expenses, which every nonprofit uses a portion of donations to do. And if people are interested, they can sign up on our website, which is www.hilt.org.
H like Hawaii, I like?
Islands.
Islands.
L like land, and T like trust. Hawaiian Islands Land Trust. You can also just Google it, and we'll come right up. So you can sign up directly there to become a member, and you can call me directly, 755-5707. If you have questions, if you're a landowner and interested in working with the land trust or learning more about the resources and tools that we use to protect land, or if you're part of a group, Rotary or Lions or anything else, and are interested in a speaker, I'm always willing to come and talk.
And I have your phone in number in my phone as Kahili Beach Damage. So, like, you do things like you actually steward the land, like when we're seeing, if we see people ruining an area, you actually have that kuleana also?
We do. So we own Kahili Beach on the Wailapa side.
Kilauea.
In Kilauea. We closed on an additional 12.2 acres. We have 17, almost 18 acres down there right now. And about a year and a half ago, some trees were cut down, and then a few months later, maybe 2 years ago now, trees were cut down, and a few
burned
months later...
Burned and poisoned, because that's like my home break.
With diesel fluid. So we put up signs asking if anybody had any information and raised money for a reward and went public with the story, and thankfully it's all stopped. We never found out who did it, but it hasn't happened since. So
Right. Shining
some attention on it seemed to help.
So thank you for that. And I want to thank the Kauai Soapbox Live's contributors. You all keep us on the air, and we just did our fun drive, and thank you so much. So shout-outs to Wendell, Clayton, Rita, Lori, who just called in, Haley, Sarah, David, Steve, Blake, Ray, Mark, Mimsy, Laura, Jane, Josephine, Maria, Jeffrey, Joe, Kathleen, and they put me on here too because I did also. So mahalo from the station that loves you. And you know what I do? Besides, I did do a donation right there, but I'm a monthly donor. I do like $50 a month. And that's a really nice way for the station to stay strong and not have to be too aggressive with all these donations. They can just plan on it. And I bet that you could have sustaining members, too, in your piece. If people just gave $10 a month or $15 a month, that could work also.
Yeah, we do. We have the capability to sign up folks for monthly donations and to bill you automatically or to charge your credit card automatically. One other thing, membership gifts also make a great holiday gift.
Yay, that's a great thing. They could do it in your name. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, K-2-8-4-A-L, Holly Eva. Jazz with John will be on in just a moment. And this is Felicia signing out with the County Council report for this week. And my understanding is there will also be a County Council meeting Friday morning, and that is going to be focused on selecting the vacancy for Nadine's. It's an executive session, so people don't show up for that. Maybe not. I don't know. Okay. Thank you.